We are now in the opening weeks of the spring-summer migratory bird harvest season, which was the topic 3 weeks ago. We are also likely still a few weeks away from any sort of serious bird numbers, though I've no doubt a few hunters have likely harvested some birds already. I won't go into a complete rehash of the do's and don'ts of that episode, but I would encourage everyone who plans to hunt to have the necessary paperwork. In my case, that's a state hunting license and a state duck stamp, both of which I bought online and printed off a week or so ago. I'd also remind hunters to have only non-toxic shot in their possession while hunting waterfowl. There are several options available, but probably the most common is steel shot. After that, how you go about it is largely a personal thing. Some likely use calls and decoys, while others just set up on really good ambush points and let the ducks and geese do their thing. With regards to firearms, a lot of hunters will likely use either a pump or a semi-auto, though break actions, whether an over-under, a side-by-side, or a single shot, will see use also. It's even possible there's a handful of lever and bolt actions that get used, though I'd bet those numbers are low. Irrespective of the action employed, all of those firearms used for waterfowl fall under a singular umbrella term. They are all shotguns. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. My own history with shotguns has been somewhat up and down. I don't have the long and utterly proficient shotgun history that many of you listening do. For me, types of hunting that require a shotgun are largely diversionary, while I wait for other types of hunting to open. I hunted cottontails with a single-shot 410 during my youth. During a middle stage of my adult life, I used my dad's Winchester 1300 to good effect. After six or so shots to pattern it, I only ever shot it at turkeys after that, and I am proud to say that I've killed every turkey I've shot at with it. I do use a Remington 870 Police Magnum for my job, as bear protection when in the field, and I have to pass a proficiency test for it each spring. I own a Mossberg 500 that I use for most shotgun hunting endeavors, one that I picked up for a song online. More recently, I've hunted with a Savage 24, the bottom barrel of which is a 20-gauge, and in the last year or so, I've had decent luck with it on a few geese and a handful of grouse. Again, I've not had the tons of experience that I'm sure many of you have, but I guess I'm no rookie either. Today, I thought we'd spend a bit of time looking into the history of the shotgun, whereas it's going to be an important outdoor tool for many in the months to come. While I'm not a shotgun guru, I read enough gun-related magazines and putz around on gun sites online enough to know this. Today's shotguns are exceedingly sleek, efficient shooting machines. But how and when did they start? I guess it's best if we first define what we're talking about, though I'm sure 90-something percent of you are already on the same page. A shotgun is a firearm that, at the pull of the trigger, shoots multiple projectiles at the same time. Most often these are roundish balls of varying size and amounts. Unlike a rifle, which can shoot a single projectile, a bullet, at a very long distance, shotguns are mostly short-range affairs, say 50 yards or so, give or take a bit. The mass of small projectiles, called shot, disperse into a pattern as it leaves the gun. These are the types of firearms we use for waterfowl hunting. As near as I can tell from the reading that I've done, there was no single watershed moment where the first shotgun was used and the feat was recognized. Also, the term shotgun didn't come into common use until the late 1800s. Prior to that, firearms we would now call shotguns went by other terms, such as fowling pieces. Gunpowder dates back to Asia, a very long time ago, and we know the Chinese had a hand cannon for which they used a number of projectile types. It's entirely possible that someone at some time, lacking anything better or maybe just curious, grabbed a handful of small stones or other small objects, shoved them down the pipe, and the hand cannon very quickly became a shotgun, though that's just speculation, and it certainly wasn't called that until much later. There are historical references to all manner of projectiles fired from guns, using gunpowder as the catalyst. The earliest such guns specifically for use with shot began to appear in the late 1500s. Gunmakers began to make them without rifling in the barrel, and instead with smooth bores, which worked much better for firing small-sized shot. Again, these guns had other names back then, including the one I mentioned a moment ago, fowling pieces, but some others included blunderbuss, scatter gun, and trench gun. It's thought that the Germans may have been the first to make widespread use of shotguns. In the 1600s, they designed the blunderbuss. A blunderbuss is a short musket with something of a bell-shaped end to the barrel to aid in faster reloading. There is something of a pictorial history and tradition that suggests the Pilgrims used blunderbusses when they came to what's now Massachusetts in the 1600s. However, written history says otherwise. Here's what Edward Winslow, one of the original settlers, said in a letter he wrote in 1621 to a friend back in England. "Our harvest being gotten in, our governor sent 4 men on fowling, that so we might have a special manner rejoice together after we had gathered the fruits of our labors. They 4 in one day killed as much fowl as, with a little help besides, served the company almost a week." Historians tell us most of the Pilgrims' personal weapons would have been either matchlock muskets for deer and such, or fowling pieces for birds. Matchlocks were cheaper to produce than wheel locks and flintlocks, both of which were more reliable guns and cost more because of it. Fowling pieces had smooth bores and thinner metal to the barrel, so they were cheaper to produce. Also, at this time, and into the 1700s, fowling pieces often had long barrels, something along the lines of 6 feet, to aid in accuracy. The modern shotgun, as a distinct, specific firearm type, closer to what we'd recognize today, evolved in large part from a series of late 1800s improvements in powder, guns, and cartridges. Double guns were the first serious shotguns, and barrels were shortened and lightened, and made to be able to shoot to the same point of aim at normal shooting ranges. Chokes came into being, which allowed for fine-tuning the spread of the shot and to add to both range and accuracy. By the very last years of the 1800s, John Moses Browning had introduced the first pump and semi-auto shotguns, and things began to move even more towards modern shotguns as we know them. In fact, while shotguns today look a whole lot sleeker than those of yesteryear, and sights and optics are a lot more advanced, the actual design and operation of such guns hasn't really changed all that much from Browning's initial designs. Probably there's a whole other episode there, on firearms pioneers, so I'll let it go at that for right now. In addition to the sporting aspect of shotguns, they've also had a role in the military and in civilian security. During the Civil War, cavalry units favored shotguns for close-range work. They were popular for similar reasons during the Wild West period in American history. Coach riders and lawmen often carried double-barreled shotguns. World War I saw shotguns used for fighting in the trenches and at close quarters. The same was true with World War II and pump shotguns, in the Pacific theater, when fighting around tunnels and in caves. This history has continued to the present day, with modern pumps and semi-autos still very much a favored tool for law enforcement, military, and home defense use. Also, for those of us around Bristol Bay, we often keep one handy during warmer months and while camping as bear protection, like with that 870 that I carry when I'm wearing my uniform and conducting field camps for kids. I'd like to give a brief separate mention to ammunition. There are a dizzying array of ammunition types to fit all of those very specific uses. For the person who wants to tailor their loads to every conceivable situation, it's very likely someone makes an ammunition choice to fit every single one of those situations. Historically, shotgun cartridges first came about in the 1860s. The early cases were brass, like with rifle and pistol cartridges. In the late 1800s, a few ammunition manufacturers offered shot shells with paper cases, but the early paper cases swelled when wet, and paper cases could not be reloaded as many times. These paper cases were later impregnated with wax to make them water-resistant. It wasn't until the 1960s, very recent indeed, that plastic cases were introduced when Remington brought them to market. So, what does that mean for those of us today, in the coming weeks, with bird seasons once again open? Again, I'd expect that most folks will be toting a semi-auto or pump shotgun with them as they try to get a few birds to put on their tables or in the freezer. Most of those will likely be 12-gauge or 20-gauge in size, though a few others will make it to the field too. Everyone will be shooting non-toxic shot, at least I hope that's the case, and a lot of those will be steel shot. For myself, I'll be toting either my Mossberg or maybe my Savage 24. The game remains the same, though. Just like those pilgrims in 1620, and any number of hunters around the globe in the years before them, we'll be hoping to feed our families with the bounty provided by our shotguns. Here's hoping the flocks find you, shoot straight, and be safe out there. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.